Oh, I could hide 'neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring, but it rings and I rise, wipe the sleep out of my eyes. My shaven razor's cold and it stings.
Everybody, and welcome to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You were tuning into Chit Chat Cafe Live. This show airs every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live, Lisa and Nancy.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nancy. I'm very excited to have you join us tonight. We are excited and just so honored to have our first guest tonight. She was the star of the iconic TV show Dynasty, and I personally was in love with Big Valley. Linda Evans joins us tonight. And later, we're going to be joined by New York Times bestselling author Mary Higgins Clark. So stay with us for a fun hour. Lisa and Betty Ann, how are you girls?
Sad.
Yes, we're all sad.
Really sad.
But we're thrilled to have Linda Evans.
Absolutely.
Oh!
Very, very exciting. But first, let's just talk about Davey for a couple minutes. I feel so sad. We talked to him. He was on our show last April.
April 20th.
He was so sweet. I guess everybody knows we're talking about Davey Jones. He passed away yesterday. Suddenly, and I felt like I knew it. Wasn't that terrible? I've been feeling so sad. I think when your teen idols start dying, it really, like, makes you wake up and, like, oh, my God, life's so short. That sounds corny, but it's true.
Well, you know, that evening that we spent with him on April 20th, he had so much fun talking with us, and we asked Davy Jones to sing to us. He sang live, Daydream Believer, remember, girls? We were screaming. He stopped singing.
Yeah.
And then he sang, girl. We were taking pictures of ourselves while we were talking to him.
I know.
Nice memory.
Sad. It's just so sad. And just, I think everybody feels the same way, because, like, all over Facebook today, everybody was, you know, just, you know, just putting pictures of him up. And it's the end of an era, I guess. Sad. There's no other word to describe it. Betty Ann, I know you've been really, really sad. You wanted to marry Davy Jones.
I know. I wanted to marry him when I was younger. My sister and I used to fight over who was going to marry him.
Well, you told him that live, Betty Ann, I remember.
I did.
You did.
And then I told him that I named my cat Davy. After him when I was a young girl, because he was my, you know, idol, my teen idol, and I just feel so sad about it. I can't explain why. It's really bad. It's very sad. It's like I think all the girls who have teen idols, they are suffering from a broken heart right now, because it's something that stays in you forever. And now he's gone. It's really sad.
Well, so, we just need to cherish these wonderful memories and keep playing his music and singing his songs. And
that's right.
Everybody was listening to 60s on 6 on Sirius Satellite. And they were having, you know, people call up and memories of him, people that met him, and you know, people that have been to his concerts, and he was just everybody. Everybody has said he was a nice guy.
Yep.
Really nice person.
So cheers tonight to Davy Jones.
Yes, we miss him. We will miss him forever. And just like he said in the beginning of the interview, he said, "I love you forever." That is one of his songs, I Love You Forever.
It is. It's a wonderful song.
And it's a beautiful song, and it's very fitting now when you look back, because now that he's passed, everyone who was a fan of his or who loved him for his music or who knew him personally, they love him, and they'll love him forever. So,
well, it's wonderful to share the memories.
Yes.
And next week, we're going to play again the April 20th interview of Davy Jones for everyone to enjoy that and listen to that.
Yeah. But on a very nice note, I'd like to introduce a very special guest that we have tonight, Linda Evans. She's been nominated for an Emmy Award, winner of 5 People's Choice Awards for Favorite Actress, and a Golden Globe Award for The Big Valiant Dynasty. She's sharing her book with us tonight, Recipes of Life, My Memories. Welcome, Linda. This is an honor.
Well, thank you, ladies. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight.
This is really an honor. Very cool.
Very excited to have a chance to speak with you. I mean, I have loved you forever.
Well, you're very kind.
All of your shows, I remember watching you in the Big Valley and watching Dynasty. You are just so fabulous. This is just so thrilling to get a chance to speak with you. How did you first get into acting?
I actually was discovered. I'm one of those people that was in a certain place and a director saw me and gave me a commercial in spite of the fact that in junior high school I was so shy it wouldn't give a book report. And they forced me to take drama to overcome my shyness, which still didn't work. And so when this director asked me to do the commercial, I tried to get out of it, but my dad had just passed away, so it was impossible to put down the money. And my mother needed it so much, and so my career began, and miraculously, they sent me up for my first speaking part, and it was with Bachelor Father with John Forsythe, and that began my acting career. John Forsythe actually gave me my first speaking part when I was 15.
That's amazing. Well, what was it like to play Audra in The Big Valley and have Barbara Stanwyck as your mother?
Well, my God, she was a legend when I worked on that show with her, and a person couldn't be more fortunate than to have someone like her actually mentor me and show me how to be in the business, which I will always be indebted to her for, because she was such an incredible professional. She was beautiful in that everyone respected her and loved her and her work ethic, and fortunately I got trained by someone who had that way of looking at show business instead of the way some people do it today.
Wow, that's really, really, it's just so interesting, because I remember watching and she seemed like such a strong woman, you know. Like a tough, not tough, but like a lady who nobody would mess around with. Do you know what I mean?
Well, no, she had a very strong look about her, but I believe that was to hide a very sensitive, very soft heart that she had. Very vulnerable, and that's why she could do those parts and just tear your heart out, because she was just so beautifully sensitive about everything.
Wow. Did you do your own stunts on The Big Valley?
Actually, she taught me how to do stunts. She loved doing stunts, and so they asked me if I would mind doing them with her, because if they could film the two of us, that was much better for them. So she actually showed me how to do stunts, and we did most of our own. We had stunt women, and I talk about it in my book, because it was something that was a great bonding for the two of us. We'd come in and we'd do the you know, the burning house or the runaway buggy or the thing, and she would just say, oh, Audra, today we're going to do this. So it was quite fun to do them with her.
Now, I have to ask you about Dynasty. What was it like to play Crystal Carrington?
Well, what was it like to play Crystal? Let me see. Mm-hmm. Firstly, it was the first time in my life that I wanted a career, actually. Mostly, I just wanted to be married, have children, and have a regular life like everyone else. And when the husbands didn't work out and it didn't quite go the way I wanted to, I wanted a career, and that's, thank God, when Dynasty came along. And it was fabulous. Crystal was an incredible part that I was thrilled that came my way, thrilled that Aaron Spelling had hired me at a time when they were hiring women like Farrah Fawcett and Jacqueline Smith. So it was a real blessing that the part came along and that he trusted an older woman. I was almost 40 at the time, and then hired Joan Collins as well so that we could be two women that could play these fabulous parts for 9 years on television.
And that was one of my favorite shows. I have to say.
No, me too. We had a good time doing it. We really, really did, and we were thrilled that the public loved it.
I mean, the clothes. I mean, did you ever get to keep any of the fabulous clothes? I mean, they were just amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, I have a lot of those clothes. And they're, you know, stuffed away and packed away. But it was every woman's dream to do that kind of a show, because we'd come in and Nolan Miller, who was the designer, the clothes designer, would say, okay, here's the script for next week. What would you like to wear? What color? What kind of thing? And you could just say anything, and you would drop a picture, and they'd bring fabric, and he'd make it up, and there was the outfit. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Wow. That's just so, I mean, it's like a dream come true. I mean, just so fabulous. Now, I have to ask you this, because I'm telling you, this is seared in everybody's memories, and it was like one of the most famous scenes in TV history. The cat fight in the fountain between you and Alexis. was that you? Was it really you and Alexis the whole time fighting, or did they have stunt doubles in there?
Well, we always had stunt doubles, because, firstly, we weren't stunt women, even though we did a lot of our own stunts. We would never, firstly, not have them be paid, and secondly, didn't do things like, you know, car crashes or falling downstairs and things like that. So I would say a lot of it was the two of us, because there really was no danger, because what you're referring to was really the Lily Pond, and the Lily
Pond
we shot in Pasadena at the Morton Estate, where we would shoot our exteriors, was only about 3 or 4 feet deep. So we had to actually get on our knees and took it out so it looked more dangerous than it was. So there was no chance we were going to drown. Matter of fact, I talk about that in my book, because one of my favorite recipes I got the day we did that fight scene, because we had to do it all day long. It takes quite a bit of time to shoot something like that. And they went to get us lunch from the caterers that had been there that day, and I loved the recipe so much, the third time I sent them back, I got the recipe for it, because it's called Dynasty Corn Pudding, because I loved it.
Oh, that sounds good. Now, was it hard to keep a straight face when you had these cat fights? I mean, was it?
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of laughing. I mean, it was just outrageous, some of the things they had us do, you know. It was bigger than life, and so you certainly, on camera, had to keep a straight face, but when they said that, everybody laughed on and off camera.
I can just imagine.
So what made you decide to write your book, This is Lisa.
Oh, hi, Lisa. Well, goodness, there were many, many reasons to write this book. Part of it was the time in my life. I was like about 64 years old. I was looking at my life thinking, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? I mean, it's a wondrous time to be alive and be a woman because there are so many opportunities. We're living long, long lives. So 60, 70, 80, 90 is not out of the question. So we sort of have to reinvent ourselves and think about what to do with ourselves for this long, long life that we're going to have. Medical science is wonderful. And I'd been asked to write a cookbook while I was doing Dynasty because it's my passion in my life, and I've been saving recipes and collecting recipes for years. And I've been asked to do a memoir, and I thought, wow, what if I combine my passion for cooking and all the great recipes I've got and write a memory book where I go through just the highlights of my life and all the things. And, by the way, I have like 78 photos that most of them have not been seen personally and that I was able to put in and just do the highlights of everything, and that's how it came about.
What is your specialty in the kitchen?
Anything that the person in front of me loves to eat. It's so wonderful. Food, feeding someone became all about love, because you have to admit that everyone loves to eat and everyone loves to have fabulous food. So when I would find out what somebody would like, you like Italian food, you like pasta, you like a salad, you like, you know, Chinese, what do you like? I would go out and search and find and cook many recipes to get the ultimate one and then cook it for them. That's why I just put my very best recipes in this book.
Oh, that sounds great. Do you like, are you a sweet eater?
Of course. Of course, of course. My idea of great food, I mean, I have about 4 or 5 of the best chocolate desserts you're going to ever eat in your entire life. But I also have the best lemon meringue pie ever. So, I mean, I've got everything you can imagine in there.
Well, that lemon meringue pie is my favorite. I'm Nancy. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Nancy. Yeah, I love lemon meringue pie. A really good one that is tart, has a lot of flavor. I mean, it's exquisite.
Love it. Now, I love your blog. We have you listed on our Chit Chat Cafe Live website, so our fans can find you, your blog. I loved on February 13th, you wrote, "Women helping women, it doesn't get any better than that."
Right. That's for the red dress? Yeah, was that the red dress?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the fashion show.
Right, right.
Did you have fun doing that?
Oh, God, are you kidding? That was spectacular.
Yeah.
It was outrageous. We gathered in New York, and we all had dresses, red dresses, designed for us, and we wore them on a night to inform women about heart disease, which is the number one killer of women, which women don't realize because we are caretakers, we are givers, and we're so busy taking care of others, we never think to really take care of ourselves, and most women don't realize that this, they could have symptoms, and if they just recognize them, they could get help and not have this be the number one killer of women in America.
Exactly. I agree with that wholeheartedly. So your blog is really fun, and your website is beautiful. It's such fun to visit and see what else you're posting.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Well, that's wonderful. That's the beauty of what's going on now with the Internet. You know, everyone can connect. Everyone can be in everyone's life and exchange. I love that.
Well, we've really enjoyed talking with you. What else are you up to these days? What are you doing next?
What would you say doing next? I've combined, firstly, the book. I'm not finished with this book because I'm still very active with it. But I'm also traveling a lot. I just got back from a wonderful trip to Africa.
Ooh.
Where I spent 2 weeks and visited and lived with the Maasai. So, I mean, there are lots of exciting things for us to do in life. And if we are healthy and take care of ourselves and pay attention to these little things like osteoporosis and heart disease, we can keep going for a long time.
Linda, this is Betty Ann. I wanted to find out about how you stay so beautiful. Your photo on the cover of your book is just gorgeous. Can you share some of your beauty secrets with us?
Okay, beauty secrets. Well, from what I've learned over the years, the very greatest tip is if a woman's happy, she's going to look beautiful. I mean, I don't care if you spend days getting ready to go to a party and you diet and you've got clothes that are designed for you and makeup and hair done by the greatest people in the world. If you walk into a room and there's a woman who is there and she's laughing and having fun, you will gravitate to her beyond any person in that room. You won't even see the other people. So to me, being happy is everything. Now, if we go just and go, okay, so we're happy and we're going to be beautiful. I think, number one, I walk an hour every day. I walk an hour every day in the country because I want to be healthy and because it helps me with my metabolism. Women, you know, don't always realize that if their metabolism starts slowing down, if they do anything aerobic or anything like walking briskly or anything like that, that it jump starts it. And that certainly helps us with our bodies. Anyone who's listening who's young can learn from me not to go in the sun, because I was raised in California. I was in the sun most of my life, and there's been a lot of sun damage and a lot of having to try to undo what I did. So if you're young and you like the sun, take care of your skin, because later you don't even have to go in the sun for 5 years and sunspots will come out. And they have wonderful, wonderful ways of doing laser that helps get rid of these dark little things that come on our faces. But to me, being happy, being healthy by just living right really makes every woman beautiful.
And I guess eating some of the wonderful recipes in your book, too.
Well, certainly I don't abstain from life. That's one of the things. I don't watch my diet. I eat quite a bit, and I work out so that I can eat and enjoy the things of life. It's not abstaining. It's like jumping into life that I'm into, especially at this point in my life.
Yes, I agree. You are so lovely, and we just love talking to you.
Oh, well, thank you. You're very sweet, ladies.
And we're so honored. This has just been such a thrill and an honor. I want to thank you very much for coming on the show tonight.
Linda, would you join us again on Chit Chat Cafe Live? It would be fun for perhaps each of us could make a recipe and chat about it.
Okay, great.
That'd be fun.
All right, thank you.
Well, we've enjoyed speaking with you. You are a gracious guest and hope you join us again.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye, ladies. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
What a sweetie. She was wonderful. Now, remember, everyone listening to Chit Chat Cafe Live, if you'd like to hear Linda Evans chat with us over again, the archive will be available in the next few days, so it's always fun to listen to those archives. We're going to take a quick commercial break, thanking our sponsors first, St. Croix Orthopedics, Laura Geller Makeup, and Intimacy Bras. Stay with us. We're going to speak with New York Times best-selling author Mary Higgins Clark.
Me as a white knight on his steed. Now you know how happy I can be. Oh, and our good time starts and ends without dollar one to spend. But how much, baby, do you really need?
back to Chit Chat Cafe Live on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'd like to introduce our next guest. We are just wildly honored to have author Mary Higgins Clark with us. This is just unbelievable. My sister is a huge fan. She reads every one of your books. She gets your book is like the day it comes out. She pre-orders them all the time.
She's my new best friend.
Yeah.
Let's say hi to Lynn, everyone.
Lynn was going to come on the air tonight, but she had her teacher conference. She's a teacher. She had conferences tonight. But she just is crazy about all your books.
Well, thank
Mary,
you.
Would you say hi to Lynn?
Hello, Lynn. I'm sorry you're not with us. Having five children, I understand teachers' conferences and all the rest of it. In fact, my daughter, who is a presiding criminal court judge, is just speaking tonight at a local high school, warning the parents about letting the kids drink and drive and all the rest of it.
Oh, that's your daughter?
Good.
Yes. She speaks every year at several schools, you know, with prom times coming before you know it and all the rest of it, to just let them realize how serious it is to let kids have the keys to the family car and not know how many kids they're going to pack into it.
There's been so many of those deaths lately, too. That's all you see on the news. It's just so depressing.
Oh,
your daughter's Carol, right? Your daughter's Carol, and she's a
I have five children. I have three girls, and my oldest is Marilyn, and she's a criminal court judge.
Oh, wow!
And she's presiding judge of a criminal court, so she's just letting the parents know, you know, just be careful. You know, they're so much better if they have a parent driving them around, because we all know that some of these kids somehow will find a way to have a beer or something when it's illegal.
Mm. So tell us, Mary, how did you get into writing and suspense?
Well, the writing was something that happened when I was able to put two words together. I was writing a poem. I still have the first one I wrote. My mother kept it, of course. I was writing skits and making my brothers perform in them and the neighborhood kids perform in them. I was writing poetry. So I was always writing. There was never anything that I did from the time I could put words together that I wasn't writing. So I've been very blessed, you know. All my eggs are in one basket. Can sing, can sew. If I put a flower in the ground, it dies. But all whatever I might have done was in one basket, and that was to be a writer.
Now, where do you come up with your ideas?
Well, sometimes I read about it in an article in a newspaper or a story on page three, and I never take the true case. I just take the DNA of it. And
story.
And for example, I read a few years ago a book I called "Where Are You Now," where and it was an article in the Times, where a woman has been living in the same apartment for nearly 40 years. Her son, at age 21, walked out of his dormitory in Columbia University, and has not been seen again.
He
calls her once a year. And she knows it's he. He only breathes into the phone.
Oh, my God, you give me the creeps.
But she won't leave that house, and her husband became so despondent that he drank too much. A daughter moved away, said, "I can't deal with this anxiety." But I didn't write about them, of course, but I thought, suppose your 21-year-old son disappears and does call you on Mother's Day.
Oh, God.
So it's always something. I just see something in the paper, and it says to me, wouldn't it be interesting? And I ask myself three questions. Suppose, what if, and why? And then, you know, because you have to have a motive for doing something.
Right.
So those are the three questions I always ask myself when I embark on a story.
Now, why suspense? Why not romance or, you know, that kind of, has that always intrigued you?
I always told scary stories when I was little. I would say to my friends, let's turn off all the lights and light one candle and scare each other.
And have a
weird!
seance.
But I've kind of, I'm been there. And the other, which was Mickey Spillane's great line, and he was a wonderful storyteller, but I don't do it that way. You see someone approaching, you see a frightened look, you see someone trying to run and then slip and fall, and then it's the next day. I never do violence on camera, ever. It's always, it's after it, or the moment that precedes it, and then you get away. So I do suspense in more of a Hitchcock way, if I may compare myself to his style of telling stories.
Now, I lost my train of thought. Nancy, do you have old memory here?
That's okay.
I know what it is. How long does it take you generally to write a book?
Well, I just turned my last one in. I mean, the galleys and the little corrections you make, you know, about 3 weeks ago. It will come out April 3rd, and they're already saying, now, for the catalog, Mary, what shall we put in about your next book? So I will start now writing my next book to come out next year.
Okay.
Which is fine, you know, because, again, what do I do? I'm a writer. I'm a natural writer. And after I get that moment of total relief, total, I can clean out my closets, which I do half-heartedly. Just do the little things that you haven't gotten around to doing. But then I drift up to my computer, and it's time to start again.
Now, do you write from morning to night?
No. I'd like to put, on the best possible scenario would be to write about 4 hours a day. You know, get up there about 9:30, go into lunchtime. That would be the best of both worlds. The trouble is that I do travel for my books. I do speak, for them and sign. So that sometimes, and as in the last book, the one that is coming out in April, I started it using the first person. And after 4 months of hard work, decided I didn't like it. And I threw it out the window and started again. So that meant that all fall, I had the sense of the book is due. But, that happens to writers. Sometimes you just say, this is not the voice I'm supposed to speak in. It just doesn't work.
Interesting.
But it is fun to when I sit down at that cold computer and look at it and say, dear God, here we go again. And my mental image is climbing barefoot up a slippery mountain, getting to the top eventually, and then diving into that little puddle that looks like a lake and hoping you don't crash. So having written is fun.
Now, when you sit down to do your writing, do you actually use a pen and paper, or is it on the computer?
No, computer. But on a notebook, and I swear I could put it on eBay, I'd probably get some money for it, is suppose this and suppose that. And would this one have done that? ? And then the names, and then changing the names of people, because he's not a Michael. That's not his name. It doesn't work for him. And then page 1 to 10, what happened in those pages, so that I can watch and see and make sure that I'm keeping all the characters in. And I was looking at that book today, and then sometimes if I'm in the hairdresser and I'm busy, I write in that notebook under the dryer. So that... I mean, most people have their hair blown dry, but I prefer it do that because it holds better. But I write chapters under the dryer in the same book.
Now, when you're at your computer, do you actually type, or are you able to speak into the computer?
No, my fingers touch my brain.
That's wonderful.
I'm better to, and of course, the joy of a computer is that if you can change a clumsy sentence immediately, you can go back into it. I mean, my first three books took 3 years to write because it was C insert A, C insert B. I would do 20 pages and then have to, with all my notations, have to retype them and then retype them. Whereas now, of course, if you realize, as in one book, I had Jane, Joan, Jean, Jack, and Jerry. And I thought, my God, was I stuck on the letter J? What was going on? So, you know, with the computer, you can now change those names. Whereas in the other days, 450 pages of manuscript, and you had to go through and painfully pray God you were all changing them right.
Well, you're known as the Queen of Suspense.
Not self-crowned.
What do you consider your best feature for your writing talent?
You know what it's all about is being a storyteller. And I tell this story about 20 years ago. The Mystery Writers of America have an annual dinner. And sometimes if a prominent person who is not a mystery writer says, I love to read mysteries, we give a scroll. And one year, Isaac Bashevis, the singer, the Nobel Prize winner, was the one who received the scroll, and I presented it to him. I think I was president that year. And his speech said it all. I mean, that brilliant Nobel Prize writer said, I do not care how eloquent your phrases, how polished your prose, unless you are a storyteller, you are not a writer. He said, in the ancient days, the storyteller went from castle to castle, and he began with the magical words, once upon a time, and every woman shh, and drew closer to the fire. Begin your books with those words. And that's what it's really about. No matter how literate you are, how informed you are, how whatever you are, unless you kind of start with once upon a time, something happened, and get into your book, and that's when you become a successful writer.
Well, that sounds exciting. Have you ever, in your books or in future books, would you ever consider, do you like to sometimes start at the end and then come back to it?
No, but I know where I'm going. I know who did it. You know, in my case, I always have a suspense novel, which means something happened. That my new book, which is called The Lost Years, there's a prologue, and then it starts with, today is the day of my father's funeral. He was murdered.
Oh, yeah, I like that when they do that. I like it when you do that.
Well, a writer must draw people in on the first on the first page. The joke is that the best opening line was, it was a dark and stormy night. Because it's setting, so what happened on the dark and stormy night? You know, I used to be active in a workshop, and I remember one time a gal wrote 20 pages of the most exquisite prose, and she read it for us, and people were praising the prose. And it was about a man who came out of his house, got in a bicycle, and rode into town. And you could see the sun going through the silvery green of the leaves, and on we go. And it was beautiful prose. But I said, Laurie, the problem is, I don't know whether he went into town to have lunch with his mother, to rob the bank, or to find his long-lost love. I said, I want to hear something like, when Jack rolled his bicycle out and looked back at the house, he knew that when he returned, if he returned, nothing would ever be the same.
Oh, I like that.
And you see what I mean? You have to say, why won't it be the same? What's Jack up to? You've got to, readers are smart, but they also are impatient, if you will. They're not going to give us 30 pages of prose that's going nowhere if we're not drawn into the story, and neither are editors.
Well, Mary, your experiences, you know, even your college experience was far different than the normal person, whatever normal may be. But
well, I was an adult who went back after I sold Where Are the Children, and my youngest was 16, so I knew I could be away two nights a week. I mean, away, by that I mean I could be home at 10 o'clock. And I thought I was hanging diplomas on the wall for my two lawyers, and I had two in college and one in a private girls' school. But the choke collar was off my neck, and I thought, what do I want? I said, I want a college degree, too. I had always taken courses over the years. I'd taken them at Columbia or at New School. On and on we go. But I'd not worked for a degree. So I thought, I want my own degree. So at 50, I graduated summa cum laude with a degree in philosophy.
That's wonderful.
It was fun.
It
was exciting.
Philosophy was fun, huh?
It was, well, you know, when you're an adult student, you go to study. You do not go to have a good time.
Right, because you're more serious.
You're serious about it, and you'd be impatient if somebody tied up the professor with asking a stupid question, because you're there because you want to
learn.
You want to deepen your knowledge of a subject, and it was a great experience. That was at Fordham College in Lincoln Center in New York.
Oh, yeah, Fordham, yeah.
Yes, then I was on the board of Fordham for years, and I'd been an active contributor because it's a marvelous college. And right now, one of my grandsons is a sophomore there.
Yeah, that's where my daughter's going to apply.
Great school, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it has that exquisite campus at Rose Hill, but also the kids can take, they have the little car, you know, the small van, the Fordham Ram that goes back and forth, so they can also take courses at Lincoln Center. I went to Lincoln Center, and when if I was finished, we had student passes, I'd go in across the street to the Met and go in for the second and third act of the opera.
That's amazing.
Oh, it's
now, when you write a book, I know when I read a book, I get sad when it's over because you get so engrossed in the characters and you feel like a sense of loss. Do you feel that way when you're done writing the book?
Yeah, I do. I mean, but when I'm finishing a book, it's as though you have weekend guests, and the ones who are leaving you're waving goodbye to, and the ones who are coming in who are in the driveway saying, get rid of them, we're here. And that's just the way I feel when I finish a book. There is an idea clamoring to be done. And come on, you gave them enough time already.
Now, you're from New York?
Oh, yes. I was born in Manhattan, but my parents moved to the Bronx, which was, and still is, suburban. And I mean, really, we had a farm around the corner when I lived there. Angelina's farm. God bless your mama, God bless your papa. But it's, we were raised in the suburbs, and then when I was married, we moved down to Manhattan. And the first thing I did when I made money, with real money, with the second book, was to buy an apartment on Central Park South.
You don't mess around.
Oh, it's, you know, to look over Central Park is
beautiful.
Because
I asked myself,
when I had made the second book, was the second suspense, where A Stranger Is Watching. That was when I got $1 million contract. And the first book had sold for
$3,000. Oh,
amazing. So that was a pretty good, you know, jump. And I thought, what do I want? And a voice from the cloud said, every Irish Catholic girl from the Bronx has always wanted an apartment in Central Park South. So I said, good, and I bought one.
Oh,
good for you.
That's nice.
Now, and my doctor's wife, you'll appreciate this, I think, She had been a ballerina with the Met, and she married a doctor, and she was living in New Jersey. And I told her that, and she said, I told her that story. She said, June said, I have news. Every Jewish girl from Brooklyn also has wanted an apartment. She's my neighbor. She lives in the next, in the next building now.
Now, in New York, there are so many beautiful Catholic churches. Do you have a favorite?
Well, of course, St. Patrick's, you know.
Yes.
I've been on the one of the boards for the Cardinal for the last 15 years. So I've been active in St. Patrick's and in Catholic Charities. I chair their big Christmas luncheon all the time, the Catholic Charities luncheon. So I've been very active in that. And in fact, my youngest daughter, she's not a writer, she was always in finance, but we were supposed to go to Rome for the consistory, and Cardinal Dolan, who was absolutely simply marvelous, we didn't make it because Patty was in such misery. We didn't with the sciatica, and it was just in misery, and I said, I'm not going to leave her. But he called 2 days ago. My secretary said, Cardinal Dolan's on the phone. And I thought, that's just like Cardinal Dolan. He heard that I didn't go because my daughter wasn't well, and he's calling personally to see what's going on.
Yeah, he's a wonderful cardinal. I follow him.
Oh, he's marvelous. He is simply marvelous. He is everything. I mean, he's brilliant besides all his warmth. And when you meet him, anyone who meets him for the first time thinks he has waited all his life to meet you. I mean, that's the warmth and exuberance he gives out. And he's absolutely a blessing for New York and for the Catholic Church.
Yes, he is. Well, Mary, sometimes Lisa and Betty Ann and I get to New York City. It would be a delight to meet you and have a cup of tea.
Sure. Well, we could always have a glass of wine, too.
Oh, yes. Of course. Cheers to that.
Let's not go too.
That would be wonderful. We would truly
Well, you have my phone number.
Yes. That
would
be fun.
New Jersey is where my secretary is here, because I work out of my New Jersey home in my third floor.
Where in New
Jersey? Saddle River.
Oh, okay. Bergen County.
Yeah, it's made famous. President Nixon moved here, so he put us on the map.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's a lovely, lovely, lovely town. And, you know, we don't have a McMansion, but we have a very, very comfortable home here. And the kids all enjoy it so much. It's great. And then in 30 minutes, we're in Manhattan. So it works wonderfully.
Well, it would be a delight to meet you sometime. We are huge fans, and especially Lisa's sister, Lynn.
Bye.
So we would love to have you come back and join us another time on Chit Chat Cafe Live.
You bet. I would enjoy it very much, but I'm not joking. If you're coming in, you have my phone number and I think my email, and we'll just get together.
Oh, we would love that. We will do that. We're thinking March or April, right, Lisa?
Yeah, maybe end of March, beginning of April.
That's great.
We're going to Florida for just a week because, plans change when Patty got sick with this. But then we'll be back here and we'll be around.
When are you going to Florida?
Next week, just for one week.
Yeah, it'll be after that.
Yeah, well,
and
you
then
have safe
then
travel.
We'll be, yeah, then we'll be back. We're just going to the Breakers in Palm Beach.
Oh, in Palm Beach, very nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of friends there. But we were planning to go last month, well, early February, when we usually go. But then we thought we were going to the consistory in Rome, and then couldn't do it. But I went to the last one 11 years ago, and I don't think I'll be alive for the next one. But anyhow,
we cannot wait to meet you, and you are just a delight.
Well,
definitely be in touch.
Let me know. Drop a hat, and we'll meet in the apartment in New York and have some fun.
Wonderful.
It's a plan.
Good. Thank you.
Or as Jersey Shore, God help us, would say, it's a situation.
There we go, Mary.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you so much.
You bet. Right on.
Bye.
Bye.
Lisa, wasn't that delightful?
Oh, my God. What a doll.
Can't wait to meet her. We'll have to bring Lynn.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we're thanking our sponsors tonight, Laura Geller Makeup, Intimacy Bras and St. Croix Orthopedics, and also our fabulous producer, Corey King. Remember to tune in every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. here on Artists First to hear the Corey King Show.
And don't forget to listen to our archives. Just go to our homepage, scroll down to the date you'd want to listen to the show, click and just listen and enjoy. And we're going to leave you with another Davy Jones song. Good night.
Good night, everyone. Cheer up, sleep.